Hello, everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. We've got a timely update today. Here we are on May 18th, 2020. We're post-halvening of Bitcoin. Bitcoin, you know, had a pretty big move over the weekend. It's kind of pulled back now. I think last I checked, it was around $9,500. Gold has been moving strongly, but in the open this morning, we saw it get slammed, like really right out the gate. It had like a really strong move. But, you know, right around the over 1700 materially, really looking strong there. Markets are up too. And, you know, there might be something to be said about that, you know, we're seeing crypto and the stock markets moving up at the same time. And so we're going to talk about these things today with our guest, Joel Valenzuela. We're going to be discussing the virus as it pertains to the economy, the global economic breakdown, and digital currencies as it pertains to competition to fiat money and the development on what is going on there. Again, a lot of people are really hard-headed when it comes to just being open to something else that isn't gold or that isn't US dollars, quite frankly. But, you know, I think as time continues to go on, cryptocurrencies continue to solidify themselves as part of the future. So be open to that. Joel Valenzuela, he's an independent commentator. You can follow his work at his Twitter, at the Desert Links. That's his Twitter handle. We'll have it in the description area. And he's promoting this month the Fiat Free Challenge. So we're going to be discussing that today. Joel, thanks for coming back on Crush the Street with me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Always a pleasure.
Let's dive right in, guns blazing. Let's get your thoughts on the current virus situation and the extent of the lockdowns as it pertains to the economy and our freedoms.
Yeah, so as far as I've been able to tell, and of course, I'm in no way a medical professional, and I've not been following everything closely, just the chatter surrounding things, it seems like the situation that we've experienced has largely been grossly exaggerated by authorities in terms of the impact, in terms of other things like that. And of course, this isn't, you know, this isn't necessarily the primary focus though, because I do believe that whatever has been done in response to this situation has been way, way more destructive, especially long-term than what was sought to be avoided in this case. So most of the country, I mean, we look around the world, there's a bunch of different ways this is like played out. We've definitely seen when people start rising up with protests and things start getting ugly and things like that, and economic ills don't just happen overnight. It's not like you have a lot of money, you have a lot of supplies, you have a lot of everything right now, and then something happens and then you just lose it all overnight. It's not as instant as that. Sure, you can, but it tends to take time. And so I'm surprised at just how it's kind of surprising. I would say I'm not surprised, but it would be surprising at just how quickly people have sort of risen up and started, I would say, flagrantly disobeying a government that they would not have thought of doing that, you know, just a few months ago. It shows just how desperate people are getting now. Now let's not talk about, you know, next few years, how bad this whole thing could be. But I definitely think that a lot of people are in for a rough time and a rude wake up call over the next few years. And it's not because of, it's something that could have absolutely been avoided. In fact, it could have been avoided by basically not doing a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were like in a 747 jet at 35,000 feet running out of gas, right? Thinking everything's fine. And then boom. Well, what do you do now that you're out? And so we have the government's responding in just massive stimulus package. The Federal Reserve has expanded its balance sheet to $7 trillion, and it's just going up probably to 10 and 12 and beyond. In this environment, though, we've almost had it stitched along with these stimulus checks. I mean, there are certain politicians talking about monthly $2,000 checks for people, you know, and I feel like to a certain degree, we've been able to stitch this along for the time being, but ultimately you got to do something about the fact that we're 35,000 feet in the air and no gas in the tank. I mean, what's your thoughts on this? That the fact that we've been stitched along, the markets are, you know, recovering, the equity markets, and things are, you know, lubricated to a certain degree with funding money.
Yeah, I think it could be an unfortunate bubble, and not a bubble is in, oh, things are actually going great, but a bubble is in, things hanging on is the bubble. And we could face something pretty serious in the future. More particularly, I mean, you cannot just shut down large portions of human productivity and ingenuity over an extended period of time and just take all that activity off the table and not expect some sort of serious consequences for that. I mean, anyone who knows that an interconnected global economy depends on every single small actor doing their best, whether it's the hairstylist making money and then putting that into buying things off of Amazon, which then feeds demand for production somewhere else, everything going in, everything you sort of just shut down and then start paying people money that doesn't really exist. Mm-hmm. It's, if you could string this along, it's entirely off of the backs of future valuation of assets, probably. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that this is a great time to start thinking about how you can minimize your exposure to the US dollar and other fiat currencies.
Get ready for the 50-year bond, the 100-year bond. You know, already 125 million people across the world starve. Mm-hmm. People are expecting, and there's some studies out there that show an additional 100 million people plus will starve because of this economic lockdown, you know, in countries that are already problematic, have weak economies and very bad supply chains. So it begs the question, if this is really about health, are we doing the best net procedures that's going to help people? I mean, that's not talking about depression, suicides, job loss, all the indirect problems that are coming because of this huge overreaction as you've put it. And you know, the numbers aren't out yet. I'd be really curious to see someone go through, really comb through this and show, you know, how many millions of dollars are being spent per every loss of life that was directly connected to COVID, directly, mm-hmm. not indirectly. I mean, how much are we spending around the world for every single life lost on COVID? And you know, again, it's not to take away from anything, but it's to question, you know, our response to a certain pandemic and then obviously turn it into a global political issue, which, again, I think that's where this is all going. And as it pertains to our freedoms and our money, I mean, what are your thoughts on what we're seeing right now? Is this going to be a net benefit for, you know, the need for something that gives us freedom like cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I have come kind of mixed feelings about this whole thing, because on the one hand, we are experiencing some really bad stuff, to put it lightly, where you have a free market system which is used to adapting to all kinds of ill-timed events that has been sort of shut down in a lot of ways. And then, of course, you have government overreach as now kind of the new norm, where before people had rights and now they can just say, you're non-essential, stay indoors, or, you know, you go to jail. Or if you operate a business without our explicit permission, you go to jail. Those kinds of things are very destructive. On the other side, I kind of see the world moving towards a more freedom-oriented mindset. And of course, it's only going to be so long until it pops. I mean, I'm sure I've already seen quite a few people who would never question authority in the past, you know, adopting a very like punk rock attitude of just, I'll do whatever I want, you can't stop me, rise up, all this kind of attitude change that is, of course, resulted from this, you know, terrible situation. I have a lot of hope on that. And then also a lot of people are getting scared based on the way the economy is going. They're starting to look into other things. When you start hearing things like hyperinflation and things like that, a lot of people that just were like, oh, well, that might be a funny money side thing. People are starting to look into alternative forms of currency. And especially, I think there have been some serious wake-up calls with the near run on the banks we had. Now, I don't know how closely most of your viewers have paid attention to that. But right at the beginning, when you had the toilet paper shortage and everything, and people were sort of in panic mode, a lot of banks, a lot of people were making runs on the bank to try to get as much cash out as possible because they didn't trust the banks. And banks started to limit their, in the US at least, limit their withdrawals of cash to, I think, $500 per person or something like that in some branches. And I still hear, you know, stories of friends recently that were trying to shut down to basically get most of their savings out, or like, let's just say around $2,000. And they had to spend a whole week basically fighting with the bank and calling up branch managers because they wouldn't let them get their own money out. So now I think that people are starting to think, wow, this is crazy. It's not enough to just be diversified, but we have to actually start using something different that we can actually rely on, because we can't just rely on the old banking system anymore. It's not just, oh, well, sometime in the future, there might be a problem. But now, very soon now, we're afraid of not being able to get our money out.
Yeah, that's powerful. Well, if we can start with Bitcoin, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin pre-crash with this shock to the economy as we lock down? And post, you know, kind of how it has come through, and maybe touch on the fact that it seems to be moving with the overall equity markets, or maybe not, you know, in your opinion, is it kind of doing its own thing, you know, after the chips settle?
Yeah. So that's one thing we've noticed is right away, everything crashed, right? And of course that included cryptocurrencies. Eventually that included things like gold as well for a brief period, because obviously, people are making a run on whatever they can use to buy their essentials right now. And you're not going to be able to take a silver, like I can't take this silver coin right here and then take it to the market and buy anything with it. There's a very few places I could actually do that. So people are not going to be in a crisis worried about that kind of stuff. Now, it's of course the same. Cryptocurrency tends to be even more speculative, even less of a store of a proper store of value or hedge against volatility. So because of that, you kind of saw that, you know, negative movement. I think a lot of that has to do with what I believe there's been a missed opportunity to really get this stuff used as an everyday payment system, the way, you know, I've been using it for several years. And I do think that once that kind of happens, we'll see a different sort of movements in the market. So Bitcoin is largely an investment right now. It's not, I don't think that anyone acquiring it is thinking, what can I buy with this? How can I use it in everyday commerce? That's kind of not the purpose anymore. And so, you know, it seems to be acting accordingly.
Joel, what are your thoughts in hindsight of the Bitcoin halving leading up to it and what we saw and kind of maybe what you would expect in the future?
Yeah, I think for the most part, the halving's kind of an overblown event to a certain extent, because first off, you already see it all coming, and it's just a very natural part of the way the network functions. The only thing that really changes is miners getting paid half as much, and they start losing a lot of money if the price does not double. And of course, that could cause like a security issue where the network now doesn't have as many miners on it. Or, you know, it could drive up the price. And there is, of course, a natural inclination to drive up the price a little bit, because if you assume that, you know, which is an assumption, right, that miners are going to be dumping most of their coins mined just to cover expenses. If they're getting half as much, they're dumping half as much, which means that there's less sell pressure on the market. So in that case, yeah, there is definitely an implication of driving prices up a little bit. But I think it's been, you know, pretty overblown as far as that this is just like a natural built-in mechanism that just makes everyone's hoardings go to the moon. And I think we kind of seen that's what sort of happened. There was a little bit of a pre-halving run up, then there was a big old crash, and then it kind of recovered. And, you know, it's sort of a non-event. It's just, I think people who invest in things like Bitcoin kind of expect things to continue functioning the way they are. I think that after the first few halvings, it's kind of all priced in a little bit. I think people kind of know what to expect when they would have bought in beforehand. It's not like it's a random event that people can't foresee. Now, if that were the case, if you just had a random extra halving next week, I think that there would be quite a lot more of a shock there.
So, I mean, you would still consider it fundamental, though, fundamentally sound, I would almost venture. You know, we did have a pretty big crash in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. in crypto. What, it went below 5,000 there for a mm-hmm. quick minute. And then it has recovered. I mean, we're almost at 10,000 now. Do you attribute that to just a recovery, the halvening, you know, chip settling, stocks going back, you know, fundamental growth, buying the dip? I mean, what are some of the reasons for that?
Probably a mix of all of the above. It seems like the use of this asset seems to be pretty well established by now. It seems like, obviously, over time, and this is one thing that I think people realize, is anything scarce is going to go up versus the US dollar over time, all other things equal, just because in even like, say you have one Bitcoin and the purchasing power of that Bitcoin stays exactly the same, the US dollar price will still go way up probably because the, you know, the value of that US dollar is going to go down. And so in strict dollar terms, I think you could definitely anticipate something like that continuing to happen. But I think it's, you know, a collection of different things. There's a lot of Bitcoin as the crypto asset market in general, I think, is going to be growing significantly over the next few years. And Bitcoin still kind of has a key leader place in that industry, not only with the greatest liquidity and all that, but also as the code base that is still the source of quite a few other projects. Most, a good chunk of the cryptocurrency space still backports to the Bitcoin code base. So it's kind of like, it's like the ultimate source of truth kind of way back, and everything the other projects build, they build on that and then build something else. So just to have that value of that solid code base that then people can build off of, I think is going to keep it, you know, in the running for a while.
Let's talk about Dash. Mm-hmm. Currently around $75. What are your thoughts on Dash as it pertains to the future of money and its role in cryptocurrency, and you know, kind of what's going on? What has you excited or maybe concerned about its future?
Yeah, there's a lot that really has me excited, because I feel like everything, this is a very experimental space, and I feel like people are trying a lot of different things. There's a lot of innovation in of a lot of different subsectors of the crypto economy. And I don't feel like there's a good proper focus on the payment space anymore. That was kind of Bitcoin's original vision, was to be a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And over time that evolved for, you know, various reasons that might be too political to go into, but whatever, it's different now. And I feel like there's a few other things, like say Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin SV, a few other things that are kind of more targeting that, but are not really leaning into the innovation that much. It's kind of like the old thing works well, let's just kind of replicate the old thing. And what I really like about Dash is the focus on making, taking this to the next level, because, you know, as someone actually uses the stuff, it's, for me, it, I've gotten used to it, but a lot of the elements of using cryptocurrency are in day-to-day transactions are a little bit difficult, like the long cryptographic hashes that you copy and paste and they're not really human readable. And you have a payment that shows up right away, but then sometimes you have to wait for a block confirmation depending on the service. And there's just a lot of layers to this system that are annoying for everyday users. And so already Dash has kind of fixed a lot of those things, where payments are permanently settled in under 2 seconds. You don't have to worry about big minor fluctuations in hash rate or things like that, because all blocks are permanent in pretty much instantly, thanks to the second layer masternode network. It all runs extremely smoothly. There's some new scaling research out from Arizona State University on the Velocity protocol that could basically show that this thing can already scale to close to Vista levels. And of course, future research and innovation can make sure that goes even higher. So now we don't have to worry about the scaling problems anymore, or building a second layer Lightning network or something. And Dash platform, which has been under the works for a long time, which is just a very powerful data contract platform, but specifically creating blockchain usernames, human readable usernames that are actually stored, registered on the blockchain. That is, it's all out on testnet right now. It's all being kind of, the kinks ironed out, but it's there, it's done basically. And hopefully it will be out for regular users to use this year. Now, how great would that be for, you know, someone just to send a payment at Crush the Street, and then they just tip you there, or they send you whatever. You can just pay an invoice that way. Backend, it does a different cryptographic address each time, does all that kind of stuff. But you actually have like a two-way connection on the blockchain. That's one thing that I think people really underestimate, is how much they use centralized systems to use their decentralized money. And so, for example, what happens if a wallet provider or a exchange, or even like if you send and receive addresses over Facebook Messenger or whatever, so which I would not recommend. But if you do things like that, then those services can kind of block you out. But to have like the usable, the user-friendly usability thing, like actually have your little logo, your little profile picture, you know, registered on the network itself, so that no one can just take that down and then you're hard to find. That's like the next step, where you have something that is as easy to use as something where you have a giant company behind it, but it's all completely decentralized. And so I'm very excited about that. How the only worry, of course, is how that'll be taken to market. Is, you know, if you create the best innovation in the world and no one's around to see it or care about it, did it really happen? Does it really matter? And so that's what I'm kind of brainstorming, is because I believe that this could really change the world, really shake it up, really fulfill the original purpose of a digital money that's a sorely lacking thing in this space, because basically no one lives off this stuff except me, as I keep saying. And I think that I'm very interested in seeing other people be able to kind of do this thing that I've done the ugly trailblazer work to kind of try to do.
Okay, I want to talk about the fiat-free challenge, but before we get into that, maybe you can comment on this. Is crypto an ally for gold, in your opinion? I know in 2017, you know, we had word from bullion dealers that, you know, the majority of people that were calling bullion dealers in 2017 for a multitude of reasons were selling their precious metals. You know, the market was going up, and a large reason was crypto, the crypto rally. But as the chips are starting to settle, is it, in your opinion, a good thing to have more competition out there? And is crypto an ally for gold to fiat money?
I would say it's definitely an ally, and it's a lot has been done of the whole digital gold versus physical gold and things like that. And I think that eventually we're going to see, this is one of those debates that it's going to be a textbook debate where people read back over time and just say, ha ha, this is funny. They were talking, comparing these two. And eventually it's going to be just completely different asset classes with a lot of similarities. But, you know, if this kind of idea of like a war or a compliment is kind of a sign of our specific times, I think. So the one thing is, cryptocurrency will always be eminently more usable than gold and more dynamic. Now, on the other hand, it's always kind of there's always an element of a moving target, because we're talking about code, live code. And a lot of arguments about Bitcoin, or, you know, even Bitcoin competitors like Bitcoin SV, for example, center around like a protocol set in stone and all this kind of stuff about trying to make this, you know, solid like gold, that this is something that's never going to change. You can't manipulate it, all that kind of stuff. And there is a lot of truth to that. And then there's also a lot of not truth to that, because just the other, there's dedicated, for example, I know there's a dedicated developer on the Dash team that all he does is go back and look at the changes to the Bitcoin code base and modify them and adopt them to keep the Dash code base up to date to that. And it's because of the living code base, it's every single time you find an exploit, it could just destroy your whole system if you don't fix it. And you might find some new threat vectors would come out where you find you can hack something and then you got to patch that. And so because of that, I think there's always going to be a little bit of a riskier element to any cryptocurrency over precious metals, just because they're digital and they're living and they're in code. They're not like, you can't hack gold, really. I mean, you can't, just like, no one's going to find a way, as far as I know, to perfectly replicate gold, to be able to duplicate it. And you're not going to be able to find a way to just, you know, artificially inflate the supply, or find some exploit to steal it that's more than just, it's kind of a very known quantity. So I really think, and also, a non-digital world is a scary world for most of us. If we lost electricity and the internet and things like that, I think that losing crypto would be one of the least of our problems. However, let's just say that something like that were to happen, it would be good to have something that's physically accessible as well. Or, you know, when something happens to an individual, right? If you lose your connectivity or you lose your access to internet or whatever, still being able to have something physical is, of course, a great compliment. So long-winded ramble to basically say, I think that they're definitely complementary.
Great. Joel, let's talk about the free fiat-free challenge. So you alluded to it, you're living off of crypto on a day-to-day basis. Elaborate a little bit on that. And I'll preface it with this. You know, a lot of people are frustrated that they spent their $100 gold, right? Many years ago, or not many years ago, not that. And now looking at $9,500 Bitcoin, what did I totally messed that up. I want to actually pull that out. Edit. See, we get the edit there. All right. We're getting an unstable internet connection. Are you
cameras
here? Are you hearing me? Hold on, let me pause it. We're not getting a good
internet connection.
Joel, I want to finish this interview here with the discussion of the fiat free challenge, something you've started. It's you're challenging people to use crypto only for the month of May. And you even alluded to, you know, crypto being an investment versus actual transactions in a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I think the caveat to that is people want to spend what they would rather not have. I mean, I think that's what they want to do. They'd rather get rid of their fiat for those that truly believe in the future of crypto, because they think that it's probably going to go up in value, right? They're frustrated that they sold their $100 Bitcoin, right, for whatever it was they purchased. Looking back now, obviously that purchase is a lot more expensive. But, you know, what are the caveats to that? And, you know, I know there's truth to what you're trying to do here, you know, for the future of crypto. So kind of flush through this for us.
Yeah. So real quick on that whole Gresham's Law kind of a thing. I think it's a very short-term kind of a prospect, where if you have half your savings in crypto and half in something less valuable, you're going to spend the less valuable stuff first. Now, first off, at some point, you're going to notice vendors and things like that will prioritize things they'd rather have. So it goes both ways. Just because you want to unload your worthless money, so to speak, doesn't mean that people who are accepting it would rather have that. They would probably rather have the good stuff. And also, more importantly, it has something to do with what you get to replace it with. So every single month, you get paid, or every few weeks or however long, you get paid in something. And if you value cryptocurrency more and you want to hold on to that, you're not going to say, oh, but please pay me in something different. Please pay me in something that I don't value. It doesn't quite work like that. And so I think a lot of people who are trying to have as much crypto as they can, or any kind of solid asset, I think a lot of those people are using that as a savings vehicle, but they're acquiring more and more money that they don't value because that's all they can spend, or they don't know they can spend it. So let's just give a hypothetical situation of like an average working man who is really bought into this idea of crypto, and then they have half their immediate savings is in crypto and the other half is in dollars because they need to spend it on bills and things like that. They'd rather be more exposed to cryptocurrency, but they can't because they need to pay things. Now, what if they upped that, say, 50% to like 75%? And that extra, because their extra 25%, they could actually spend on things. So then all of a sudden they're hanging around money that's just like ready to pay for bills or whatever. That can now be, you know, sound money, something that's better. And so also, I mean, I do know I have a bunch of friends in Venezuela, and it's mind-blowing, that kind of experience of a 10% valuation drop in all their money every day. Just keeps hemorrhaging value. They got to spend it right away. And working in that environment is very challenging. Now, they love to be paid in something a little bit more sound. And then they'd be more than happy to spend it once they got rid of all their bolivars, because otherwise, what are they going to spend? And I would hate to have a situation where people have their bill paying money just completely start hemorrhaging, and then they're forced to start selling their cryptocurrency to try to turn it into rapidly devaluating money just to make ends meet. So basically, I'm trying to get as many people to experiment with trying to spend cryptocurrency as possible and just see how far you get. And that's kind of what happened with me, right? Back in 2015, I was talking about cryptocurrency a lot. I liked it. I thought this is great. I used it here and there. But at some point, I started realizing I kind of owed it to anyone listening to me to actually know what I'm talking about. And the only way you know what you're talking about is by doing. And so I just decided, hey, you know what? I'm not going to take any more fiat currency for income. I'm only going to take digital currency for income and just see what happens. And considering how crazy that is and how crazy people seem to think it is, it was surprisingly doable. I can't say there haven't been some challenges along the way, but I hope to surprise a lot of people. I hope a lot of people realize, oh, I can just do this. I can pay for that. And then before you know it, like at the end of the month, I like to see someone say, I didn't realize I could pay 30% of my bills without fiat currency. I didn't realize I could pay 80% of my bills. I didn't realize this was so fun and easy to use. I didn't realize just that this whole world's out there. And I really want to kind of expose people to the actual usage, because what I don't want to see is desperate people scrambling when they have no other option, when they're trying to make a run on the banks because they're, you know, the banks are having some issues. They can't get cash out. The online payment systems aren't working. I mean, there have been banking app outages in the past where, like, for a whole week almost, Wells Fargo customers couldn't even access their funds online because of the banking services. And then, or people who've been hoarding cash to try then to, you can't roll up a $100 bill and stick it in through your USB port to buy something on Amazon. It just doesn't work that way. And so, but you can use cryptocurrency to buy stuff off of Amazon through quite a few little indirect methods. So I think it would be, it's a great way for people to kind of get exposure to this world so they're not trying to play catch up in the midst of a crisis.
Joel, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show with us today. Everyone, Joel Valenzuela, follow him at The Desert Links on Twitter. Fiat free challenge, everyone. People that have fiat and crypto, consider using your crypto if you're a believer. And put your money where your mouth is. I mean, that's really what's going to be the future, is the fundamentals is it being used and being valued and having a purpose in our society. And I do think that's going to happen. So Joel, thanks for the challenge on that. Appreciate you coming on the show. Do you have any closing thoughts here before we say goodbye?
Yes, I came first to do this kind of thing so other people wouldn't have to learn from scratch like I did. So if you just look up how to live on crypto, I'm doing a YouTube video series also on the Library LBRY decentralized content platform, but just look up how to live on crypto. It's on my channel, The Digital Cash Network. And it's just super easy. Just walking you through how to use a basic wallet, how to buy some crypto, whether you want to use your ID or not, how to pay bills online, how to do everything. And so basically I'm doing all the work so you don't have to. So just look out for that if you're interested.